Good morning. My name is Delilah Butler. I'm a program coordinator with Prevention Institute, which is a national nonprofit that promotes quality primary prevention by providing tools and different frameworks, as well as technical assistance to communities who are focused on preventing violence, other injury or illness from happening in the first place. And we really do that by trying to help folks as they're focusing on collaboration and coordinated efforts. And today, I'm going to talk a little bit about the intersection between violence and other negative health outcomes, including chronic disease. I have no personal financial relationships to disclose for this presentation, and with that, I'll go ahead and get started. Community leaders have said, when we're working on our efforts around promoting healthy eating and activity, community leaders have said things like, reality and perception of violence are justifications for people not being outside or letting children outside and not walking to places they normally would. And I can say firsthand, you know, my own experience, I used to live in Youngstown, Ohio, and I was lucky. Some family friends moved into my neighborhood, moved in actually into my childhood house when I moved out of Youngstown. And so I get to go back to visit Youngstown often. I get to go back to visit my neighborhood where I grew up and stay in my house there. And I can say that it's distinctly different than it was when I was younger. There have been some recent shootings there. There's been some violent acts that have happened there. And now my family friends, their children, they don't go outside to play. No one's walking on the street anymore. And basically they've said to me, in order for me to feel safe, I stay inside the house and I keep the doors locked. And so, you know, we're hearing this from people across the country, not just in Youngstown, Ohio, but in other communities as well. We've heard advocates say, you know, turf wars deter people from walking to grocery stores, or things like, we have a wonderful gym in the park, but the kids don't use it because they're afraid of the park. Community violence also impacts investment in the communities, whether or not maybe there will be grocery stores there or other places that would sell healthy products. For instance, a head of security at a major retail corporation said that community safety is our number one concern. If our employees feel unsafe coming to work, or our patrons are scared to shop in the area, we won't open a store there. And so, you know, really what we were hearing in response to these concerns that we had heard from the community, Prevention Institute wanted to take an opportunity to further explore this relationship between violence and, you know, unhealthful eating and inactivity, things that are related to chronic disease. And with support from Kaiser Permanente, we did research through a literature scan. We also talked with experts and community advocates to really get more of an idea of what this intersection looked like, and realized there was a relationship. And the findings, we found two overarching findings. Violence and fear of violence affect individual behaviors related to healthy eating and active living. So, for instance, folks not letting their children play outside or wanting to walk to other areas, as well as, you know, not even feeling like they could really even think about eating healthy or being active when they were really just concerned for their safety. We also found that violence and fear of violence diminished the community environment, reducing support for healthy eating and active living. So as I said before, you know, whether or not grocery stores or other positive retailers would locate in the area. And we have more about these findings and more details in the paper. It's called Addressing the Intersection. And again, it's available on Prevention Institute's website. Also in the paper, there's a discussion about key approaches that can help to prevent violence as well as promote healthy eating and activity, so preventing violence as well as preventing chronic disease. And that's what we're going to talk a little bit about today. The first approach is really understanding a community-wide framework for preventing violence. So we know what it takes to prevent violence from happening. We heard actually already today folks talk about what the factors are that help to prevent violence. How do we ensure that we're incorporating that throughout all the work that we're doing? You know, we understand that cities with more multi-jurisdictional coordination and communication, for instance, they have lower violence rates, lower rates of violence. So again, you know, how do we incorporate what we already know into our work? And again, when we're talking about prevention, I'm talking about primary prevention. So before any acts of violence, before any injury or illnesses have occurred, how do we work to create environments that really promote health and promote safety? What are the policies that we might need to shift? What are the teams that we can work with? How do we collaborate with other partners in order to, again, shift norms and stop violence from ever happening to begin with? One of the key elements we know, we had seen factors earlier, I think they were more individual level factors. But there's also some community level factors, and not all of them are showing up here. But we know that by increasing community resilience factors like economic capital and meaningful opportunities for participation for youth, we can help to decrease violence, as well as by decreasing risk factors. So again, these are community level factors, but decreasing poverty and economic disparity and decreasing community deterioration, and we'll talk a little bit about examples of communities who have focused on this work. Earlier today, Unity was mentioned, Urban Networks to Increase Thriving Youth Through Violence Prevention. It's a national initiative. It's a network of cities across the country who are really working to implement these efforts around, you know, increasing resilience and decreasing risk. They're coordinating their efforts and creating comprehensive solutions that focus on how to, again, shifting policies and environments in order to prevent violence. One of the Unity cities is Minneapolis, and a few years back, Minneapolis actually created a blueprint for action, and these are a couple of the elements that were included in the blueprint, including connecting youth to trusted adults and working to unlearn the culture of violence in Minneapolis. And what they saw was that through this blueprint, within 2 years, there was a decrease in homicides in young people aged 15 to 24 years. So again, this is another attest to the fact that we know what needs to be done to prevent violence, and the next step is really thinking about how do we incorporate that work into our other cross-cutting strategies. How do we address violence prevention through environmental and policy change strategies that promote healthy eating and active living? A way to apply the preventing violence lens to some of the healthy eating and active living strategies are outlined here. Creating safe spaces, for example, thinking about joint use or shared use with schools, churches, other community organizations. Also thinking about how are folks using their safe routes to school funds, not just to focus on traffic safety or safety, you know, making sure that the sidewalks are, there's sidewalks for kids to walk on, but also ensuring that, you know, local areas feel safe for children to walk through, or, you know, thinking about how do we increase the vitality of a community and change the environment around the community to create these safe spaces for youth as well as other residents to recreate, as well as promoting community development and employment, thinking about grocery stores or other positive retail that can help provide employment. We know when there's community vitality, when there's economic vitality, then rates of violence are decreased. So how do we do this through healthy eating and active living efforts? Also fostering social cohesion. We heard a lot earlier about social connectedness and the relationship with violence prevention. So creating, you know, through, again, these healthy eating and active living, all these cross-cutting strategies, these opportunities for people to connect within the community. Another key approach is thinking about what are the role of practitioners and really elevating those roles and fostering safer communities. So what are the potential roles? Folks could act as catalysts, thinking about who are the other groups in the community that can be participating in some of the strategies that are already occurring, some of the current efforts to help, again, bring in that preventing violence lens to the work, coordinating efforts between folks who are working on chronic disease as well as folks who are working on preventing violence, seeing how those strategies overlap even and helping to think about ways to integrate that work. We, in our paper, talk about multi-field collaboration quite a bit because we know that, again, coordinated, comprehensive efforts are really important for preventing violence. So how is the community or youth in the community working with public health who are working with preventing violence advocates as well as law enforcement? These are just potential partners, but, again, thinking through how do we work together in order to really integrate the violence prevention lens into our strategies for improving health. One of the recent, in the last 18 months, there was a pilot that has happened in 6 sites across the country. And these pilots that were actually supported by the Convergence Partnership, which is a national group of funders who have come together to really support what they call a vision of healthy people in healthy places. The Convergence Partnership supported these community teams. The Convergence Partnership supported these community teams that were looking at how to integrate violence prevention into their healthy eating and active living strategies. And I'm going to talk through some of the innovative approaches that each of the sites took, and this is where we get to how to urban gardens. I know you all are wondering how we answer that question, what do they have to do with preventing violence. In Louisville, Kentucky, for example, the Shawnee neighborhood realized that a lot of the violent acts in the community were related to alcohol abuse, and so they wanted to figure out how do we decrease alcohol consumption. One of the ways they wanted to approach this was by taking down alcohol and tobacco signage. And while they were doing that, they thought, okay, well, now there's an opportunity to look to focus on beautifying the neighborhood. How do we make the neighborhood feel more safe for people and more make it so that people feel more safe walking around? And they started looking at lighting as well as looking at the repair of the streets, the previously neglected streets. They really started talking with different agencies in the city in order to repair the streets within the neighborhood, again, to create this overarching, this feel of my neighborhood feels safer. I feel like I can walk a little bit more, getting more people out in the street so that there's more eyes on the street, as well as, again, reducing alcohol consumption, though, by taking away some of the signage that was just cluttering a lot of the local corner stores and other businesses. In Detroit, Michigan, they really took a unique approach to this. There was a Osborne community. It's I think 2-mile radius within their community where there was a local grocery retailer there, but some folks didn't necessarily feel safe walking to the retailer. So Detroit wanted to create this community bus system in order to be able to help folks get from to the few resources that were within the community. And then within that, they hoped to bring other retailers to the community because they had this community resource and that folks could use to get around to different places. So again, they're hoping to stimulate economic vitality in order to prevent violence as well, and they were doing this through creating this bus system to get folks to each of the retailers in the area. In Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, there's an 87-acre park called Hunting Park, and it really was seen as unsafe. There were a lot of acts that were happening within the park that did not feel, made it so that folks didn't feel comfortable going there. And so what they decided to do in Philadelphia was think about how do they bring resources to the park and get the community involved in a way that they can increase stewardship of the park. And so by bringing in a community garden as well as a farmer's market, they were able to really connect with the youth in the area as well as seniors who lived close by but didn't feel safe in the park. And right now they've broken ground on the community garden and started putting in the plots there, as well as the farmer's market has started. And I go back to Philadelphia often. I used to actually live there in Philadelphia after college. And when I have gone back, I've gone to this farmer's market and talked to some of the community members there, and they're just really excited about having this opportunity, something to go to in the park. And it's really changed kind of the ownership of that space. In Denver, Colorado, they created an urban farm in the neighborhood where they were working, and they really are providing job training and skills, problem-solving skills to youth in the community, and specifically youth that were involved with the juvenile justice system. So giving youth an alternate opportunity for participation in the community, but doing this around something that focused on bringing healthy food into an area that had previously had a food desert. So again, this is a way to really link those healthy eating strategies with the preventing violence strategies. So through the research, through the pilot projects themselves, we're seeing that there's this movement being built, this increased interest and recognition of the intersection of violence and chronic disease, and this approach, how do we figure out approaches to address that? We saw with the National Prevention Strategy that there's the inclusion of safety there, and this wanting to understand how are we really collaborating, how do we create collaborative efforts to transform communities overall. We also saw with community transformation grants, again, this opportunity to explore how preventing violence and can also support healthy eating and active living efforts. So we're seeing that there is a building movement. We've also seen through the pilots that there's this impact. The media is really interested in this work. Several of the local pilot sites were actually featured in the news, as well as some of the youth who had been working on each of the pilots through their photo voice and digital storytelling efforts. They've been featured in the work that they've been doing. They've seen their roles be more prominent in preventing violence through the advocacy that they've been doing to change community environments. For instance, in Oakland, California, youth were looking at how to use their Safe Routes to School funding in order to make community improvements in their neighborhood. And so they were looking at increasing lighting. They were looking at how to address the local pocket park that had some unsavory, some activities that they felt unsafe for kids to walk through the park in order to go to school, but stood right in the middle of a major, the neighborhood where most of the kids lived and the school. So how are they going to address this park through some of the Safe Routes to School funding that they had? And this photo voice project allowed them to really capture those photos and think about how they were going to advocate for some of the changes through that work. For example, Pamela is a youth in Oakland, so I guess now she's probably about 19, but at the time this picture was taken, she was 17, and she commented that dim lighting in San Pablo Avenue contributes to increased crime in that area. This area serves as a school and home route to students. We could change this by fixing street lights that are not functioning correctly to ensure security in this area. So then Pamela's picture and the statement that she made and the improvements that she suggested were then taken to advocates within the city, major stakeholders in the city, in order to help improve the environment there. We also have seen with the increased role of youth, we've seen an increase in the understanding of other practitioners that aren't just focused on preventing violence. For example, Rachel Cleese with the Denver Department of Public Health. And she said, well, I've always known that it's important to address violence while promoting healthy eating and active living. The issue has always seemed like something outside my scope, and I've not had the tools or understanding to deal with this issue. But she went on to say that the initiative has helped her connect with with violence prevention organizations, and I've been able to learn from these partners and become familiar with their tools and policy and environmental change initiatives. So again, just elevating the roles and thinking about how other people can play a role in preventing violence. You know, again, we're seeing this continued building of a movement, and you know, we know that it takes coordinated efforts. We know that it takes this this frame of preventing violence. How are we looking at that framework and integrating it across our strategies, as well as how are we working and connecting with other people who are working to prevent violence in order to really shift, you know, areas that might have neglected buildings to areas of community development and opportunities for economic vitality? How are we shifting from safe, you know, spaces that aren't available to our youth, that, you know, fences and all of our schoolyards, to places where there's an, you know, opportunities for social connection and opportunities for youth to come together, as well as other folks in the community to come together and create that social connectedness? How are we shifting from areas that might seem dangerous or unkempt to areas that, you know, are really sparking us to think about, hey, let's go out for a walk, let's you know, hang out with our friends at the local park? How do we really do that? And again, you know, those key approaches that are outlined in our research really help to show how our efforts can be coordinated and to create, you know, healthier communities overall. Are there any questions about the work? Yes, ma'am. Well, so there was a couple of things. The pilots actually weren't funded through government funding. They were funded through a group of partners who had come together, a group of national funders who had come together to think about innovative ways to address like improving community health and community safety. However, I think for other initiatives that are happening right now, like we mentioned, community transformation grants is a huge funding opportunity within the United States right now, and the first round of that was released just recently. And, you know, really I think it's thinking about how you integrate the violence prevention lens into the healthy eating and active living strategies might be one way to do this. So if you have partners in the area that are looking at funding that's supporting efforts around and promoting healthy eating and activity and changing environments to, let's say, for instance, remove food deserts, or, you know, addressing whether or not kids feel safe walking to school because of traffic, is there a way to think about integrating this violence prevention lens into that so that it's not just focused on traffic or not just focused on, you know, the food desert itself, but how are you implementing the strategies in a way that can help to prevent violence as well? That's one opportunity to do it. And I think that there's also an opportunity when you think about who your partners are and how you're overlapping with the work, you know, as you are thinking about more coordinated efforts, really leveraging, you know, each other's resources and expertise. So if there is limited funding, you know, trying to, again, think about how to capitalize off of, you know, that leveraging your partnerships that you have in order to address the issue. Does that make some sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Yes, sir.
A school that's being repurposed, the city is
I mean, I think that in these cases, because of the involvement of community residents, but specifically youth, and the work that the youth had done advocating for changes in some of the areas, it's really been, I think, hard for local government to just completely turn their back on the suggestions for improvements from the community. You know, I think it's hard to say. We all know that political climate and specific political will can definitely impact, you know, whether or not there's a response to, you know, a positive response to the changes that you're advocating for. But I think that there's things like thinking about policy champions or other people who can be, who might be a proponent for the cause, that might not sit necessarily as the residents themselves, but may have a little bit more power with all of the, you know, policymakers that are sort of sitting there. So thinking about who is, one potential champion that could help to start to spur action instead of just keeping this status quo that's happening there now.